So I'm sitting here at Southampton Homestead around the kitchen table with Jeff Powell and Michelle McManus on their property. It's quite an idyllic scene outside. We've got a nice little valley. It's a beautiful kind of wintry light kind of shining through. And Jeff and Michelle have just started producing their poultry on farm, being able to process on a little micro abattoir. Jeff, can you talk me through when things like kind of officially started off? The last time we spoke to you, it was just a concrete slab and a kind of a shipping container looking vessel.
It's been a journey, I think, from, you know, the difference between the physical infrastructure, so having a piece of equipment like the micro abattoir, and then getting the relevant authorities and permission, etc., to actually operate that abattoir and the production system behind it, so the actual farming. So since we last spoke, all of those things are now in place. So we've produced the birds, so we have a system in place where we raise pastured poultry from little chicks into tractors and then into the open range areas. And in fact, we're the only true open range, you know, free range poultry growers in WA. And then into a system where we can actually process those birds, and we can do it with our own hands and with our own equipment here on the farm. Which, you know, when you talk about reclaiming those terms of trade, getting the supply chain back onto the farm and the margins back into the farmers' pockets as well, because, you know, 1900, 90% of the, you know, if you like, the revenue of a particular item stayed on the farm. Today it's 10%. So, you know, we're really reclaiming those terms of trade through the ability of being able to process the chickens here. And then, the final part of that puzzle has been the customers. And the amazing part has been through the use of social media and through networking, you know, who are our customers and who really understands the importance of pastured food, you know, whether it be cows, sheep, in this case poultry, the really different profile of those animals and the importance of the type of fats that are actually produced from having animals actually on pasture grass and in a natural environment.
Talk me through the actual process. Obviously, not very common to have pasture-raised birds roaming about the place. How does it work? How do you protect them and what do they feed on?
Two things. One is, you know, different stages of a bird's life require different levels of that, you know, supervision. So little birds have no feathers, no way of regulating their temperature. So we have a brooder building. So specifically, you know, manage the temperature, manage their inputs, keep them safe from predators and, of course, warm. But then we begin to challenge them over the sort of 2 to 4 week mark, where we turn the heat down, we open the doors and get them adjusted to the external environment, and they develop feathers in response to that. And then they graduate. We have graduation day where they get loaded into the crates the first time, and we take them out into the next stage, which is tractors. And a tractor is a sort of like a 3x4 meter mobile shelter with no floor on it, so the birds are in direct contact with the pasture. And those shelters have food and water and all the forage the birds could need, and are moved every day. Now, of course, living in the paddock with the birds are the maremmas, which are an essential piece of the puzzle, because up to that point, foxes were still managing to predate on the birds inside those shelters as well. So since we've had the maremmas, we've had zero fox attacks on the birds, so it's been fantastic. And then the birds get to a stage where they're large enough not to slip through the final stage, which, you know, the open range areas, which are a product called graze mesh, which is nylon fencing, if you like. It looks like ring lock, smaller squares, and it's got stainless steel woven through it. And those enclosures are typically, you know, 50 to 100 metres square. And the birds can access their food, their water, etc., and graze and roam freely, have dust baths, and enjoy their final weeks, if you like.
And Michelle, still very early in the operation, but talk me through the kind of demand that you've seen from customers who are seeking this product.
We've had excellent demand, excellent response to the product and the business. So largely people that are, I would call them conscious customers. They're just food conscious, health conscious, enjoy eating real food. We get a lot of comments like, this is the kind of chicken I had growing up, or I made some for my grandmother last week and it reminded her of her childhood. So really excited about the response from people.
And not only a unique way of raising and processing the birds, but you guys also kind of have a unique connection with your customer base. Talk me through how you're going about selling the birds as well.
Yeah, so it's very much a word of mouth and direct relationship with our customers, which is the model that we're really keen to implement. So we particularly use Facebook and other forms of social media, but mostly Facebook and connections and relationships and networks. So we connect with key individuals who are really passionate about this kind of food. For example, a nutritionist and naturopath in the Southwest, Sally Gray, we've connected a lot with her and she's been really supportive using her networks. We're starting to build on those in Perth. So we've set up direct customer buying clubs where on a certain time, a certain day at someone's house, we meet and we do a delivery. So people order online through me and they show up at that certain time. So that's a key way that we distribute our product. But we also will be doing the Manning Farmers Markets, Margaret River Farmers Markets and selected retail.
Okay, we're walking down towards where we've got the micro abattoir, and I say the word micro because it is quite a little room. On this big concrete slab here, we've got a cooling room, and it looks basically the size of a shipping container, I guess I'd say. Nice and compact, but clearly quite efficient for processing at the moment, those 30 to 50 birds a week and up to about 200. And as we walk down here, Jeff and Michelle were talking about putting in some of that infrastructure that's obviously needed to support it. You've got to have your access to power, you've got to have your access to water. Guys, how much have you needed to invest in actually setting up the on-farm abattoir here?
So, you know, in real terms, we found this unit, I think I mentioned to you in the last interview, in the trading post, which is hilarious.
Like an episode out of The Castle.
Totally. You know, how much was he asking? But we then invested in getting that here. So it was $25,000 for the unit itself and cost about $15,000 to get it from Cairns to here, so about the furthest spot in Australia it could possibly be. And then, yeah, just getting the building constructed, etc. So it's going to take those setup costs somewhere in the order of, you know, $50,000 to $100,000 probably to get this. And you know, all those processes are underway now.
Plumbing and deep freezing, cold storage.
We very quickly realised we were going to outgrow certain elements, and when we realised that the business was in fact looking seasonal and what's going to suit the animals themselves as we get to know them, we realised we're going to have to carry inventory over summer, so therefore we need a freezer. And now we've got those energy costs, and so now we're looking at renewables, and we need to put in a solar array and etc. So I'm talking to some of the local fruit growers, for example, who've done them. There's all these questions sort of ongoing. You know, you don't know what you don't know, mm-hmm. and until you get there. So, yeah.
And we were having a discussion about this in probably using some not the nicest words in terms of trying to get everything on track in terms of being approved and going through that regulatory system. You guys you've just started out. You're kind of growing as your demand grows and as you can kind of build up. What was it like to try and get the regulation through to set up something like this?
Yeah, it was quite a long process and pretty onerous in some places, to be honest. So, and largely that's because I think that the approval system is not designed for businesses of our size and scale, and even the type of production that we're doing in terms of agriculture is fairly innovative, even though it's been around for a very long time and it's tried and tested all around the world. You know, our form of regenerative agriculture in the way that we manage the animals and in the way that they are held and moved around, and then in terms of the processing, as you said, it is a really small unit. I think it surprises people sometimes just what we achieve, and what comes out of this is fairly low volume in terms of waste and product, but there's still a small impact there that needs to be managed, so we accept that. It was we just in a lot of ways we felt like we were treated a lot like a large organization would be treated that was doing, you know, 10,000 birds a day, not a year, which is what we would be looking at, anywhere between 10 and 12. So the system is designed to regulate those types of organizations, which is good. And the other thing is it didn't take into account the fact that our style of agriculture actually improves the landscape. It is genuinely regenerative. It's we're building up soil carbon, we're building water retention in the soil, building diversity in the pasture and in the biology, and therefore in the birds. So, it was quite a process. So we had to produce an environmental management plan, a fire management plan, a food safety plan, which is, of course, if you're handling product like this, that's essential. As we sort of came back to having conversations with the regulators about this and with the local government authority, just it's about appropriateness to the scale and impact of the operation. That's all that we kept sort of trying to push back on some things.
And would you guys say that that is possibly a common deterrent for people? I mean, do you have producers and growers who say, we'd love to take the next step and have something where we could process or on our property, but we don't want to jump through those hoops and go through all those forms and all that regulation?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for example, I've just finished a training course in holistic management with a whole range of different farmers and people from wide range of backgrounds. And everyone, people can see the benefit of on processing and value adding of product, and they really would like to do that. But yeah, it's another skill set to acquire, or and it, you know, it happens to be something that was in my former life, you know, doing my previous work, so I was able to bring that into this. But yeah, other people. For some people, that might be a deterrent or something that delays their decision to go and pursue that, you know, value adding on farm processing.
Yeah, look, I think there's some examples now, and I would point to Shipley's farm down in Torbay, down near Denmark. You know, they've got the butcher rooms on the farm, so but unfortunately, they have to transport the cows here to Bunbury to get them processed, and then back to Shipley's farm, and then to be refried once again. They have a direct retail model to their customers as well. So it is accessible, but you know what I'd be saying to all those producers, so pig growers, sheep, beef, is how do we decentralise the system, because it's become so central, it's actually inhibiting enterprise. Anything that stops enterprise, I think governments should be interested in.